You're listening to a Toad Network production, putting heroes on trial because someone has to. Tired of the discourse in writer fandom? Looking for something to put that bounce in your step and a bee in your bonnet? Then look no further than the Uncommoncast RX, Active Ingredients, Aleph, Amit, Claire, Gomez Q, Neji Rea, Professor What, Sona, The Imposter. Side effects may include Heiseiitis, Showa Fever, Helper Robotophobia, and an English Lilt.
I'm Aleph.
And I'm Amit.
Oh, and I'm Anna.
And I'm Jonathan, I think. Hello.
Yeah, you totally are.
Yeah.
And you are listening to the Uncommoncast RX. This is our 83rd episode covering Gaim 46, The Fate of Victor, or The Victor, The Fated Victor, that's what it is. We have a special guest on, Hannah, who was a voicemail contributor 2 weeks ago, or two episodes ago, I think.
That's right.
So, anyway, she's here to share some feelings on Gaim. And, while this episode will not be explicit, because I really want to keep the clean tag on iTunes, you might hear a lot of things bleeped out, because that's the kind of reaction the show has garnered from us, I believe. So,
that's safe to say.
Yeah. I guess, Aleph, do you want to start talking about it?
This show, I'm glad it's dead.
Not quite.
Close enough. Next episode is Death Throes, written by someone who is not Gen Urobuchi, which is the only time I like Kamen Rider Gaim.
Yeah, remember those Kikaider, or that Kikaider episode?
Yeah,
it was
remember
fun.
That, remember that soccer episode? That was awesome.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. But the monster was awesome.
I mean, by comparison is more what I'm talking about.
Well, it didn't make me want to, like, stab things.
People, it was fun, things. Which is more than I can say about the rest of Gaim.
Yeah.
And, Hannah, since you are our special guest, and I would like you to share your... in as few words as you possibly can, your thoughts on this episode in general, and then we can all discuss it, and you can weigh in where you feel it's right.
It feels kind of like a guy who is trying to play off the fact that he's drowning with the, like, hey guys, that definitely was a thing, but look at all the stuff I'm giving you now. Isn't this great? Isn't this, have I fixed everything yet? No? Okay, I'll just try not to drown. No. It just feels like an attempt. And I appreciate it. But it really is a lot to fix. And very little was presented. Very little. Ugh. That's about as few words as I can get without really going into town, so...
Okay. All right, well, as you feel the spirit moving, you go ahead and, talk over us and say what you need to say.
Amen, my friend.
All right, let's go ahead and get into it. Tikkun Olam, Kaito. And if you don't know what that is, you can go ahead and look it up, because knowledge that you attain for yourself is better than knowledge that's given to you.
I looked it up. I was very happy when I looked it up.
Kaito, or Sho, or Urobuchi, I don't know, somebody. The ethic of destruction to start anew is so awful, and I'm glad Kota is so adamantly defending the idea of repairing the world, even though Kaito's thinking is completely messed up and he likely won't listen under any circumstances.
And I really wish that we had actually explored this dichotomy in a large-scale way over the rest of the series. I mean, let's have a writer show that is deeply invested in talking about the relative merits of destroying a civilization to rebuild it from the ground up versus the often less than perfect process of repairing it. I mean, what could be more timely?
Mm. Yeah, very much so. I don't know. The whole thing with Kaito, it's just... his ideology is just so screwed up. It's like you can't even begin to comment on it because anything you say is just instantly countermanded by any action he seems to take. He even seems conflicted within himself, or just terrible writing. And you're just like, what? What do you even believe this week? I don't know.
This week, this scene.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. You know, if it's only consistent episode to episode, you're kind of like, what is this? And I do agree that, like, Kota, but then Kota kind of almost invalidates that later on in the episode when he's like, oh yeah, but Kaito had the right idea. And I'm like, no, that was the whole point. You didn't fight him to come down and say, oh, actually, we're very similar. That wasn't the point of this fight. Or so I thought.
Urobuchi just has this problem where he finds these characters extremely relatable, and on some level they are, but you should not relate to them at this stage of the game. Well, it's all right to relate to them, and it's all right to find their motives sympathetic, but at this point in the game, it's just like, okay, there's a certain amount of things you should forgive from someone and find relatable, and you've crossed that threshold. This is not the time, my friends. You know?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Kota's fruit Jesus. And fruit Jesus, fruit forgives fruit everyone.
Don't even get me started on, oh, just, no.
Taste the rainbow.
So many words. Just, we'll get to it later, it's fine. It's just, oh, there are so many things wrong with that scene. But anyway.
Yeah, and man, okay. The whole wedding language, too. Man, I don't want to get into, like, a theological thing, because this could become 3 hours, so I'm just going to stop myself there. But
no, I know.
There is
wedding
language
about, like,
replete throughout the Torah and throughout the rest of the Bible, describing God's relationship with Israel. And then, you know, in the New Testament, Jesus carries on that same, like, wedding language, with him being the representative of God and Israel being the representative of, you know, still Israel, the bride. So, like, even if you go to Revelations, there's all this wedding imagery there. Anyway, I can't. So,
and yeah, you're supposed to be the new heaven, new earth thing, and you're just like, oh, stop it! Like, you're just, well, like, I wouldn't mind, right? I wouldn't mind so much, because I don't mind people taking mythologies and kind of being like, oh, look, this is an allegory. Okay, fine, but then you're using the allegory to make a point. And if Urobuchi had been going through this trying to make a point about some sort of weird Christian allegory, then fine. But to kind of just shoehorn it all in at the end with a shovel is just, like, what are you doing? What? Like, I don't even understand. And then you've got Sagara quotes God, and you're like, what?
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing?
Implying that Urobuchi can write a theme, I'm sorry, I'm trying really hard not to crack up.
We all liked Evangelion, right?
Yeah,
I liked it.
I've never seen it, actually. I need to watch it. But, like,
I think
you know, and maybe not everyone likes it, but, like, I can at least, I feel like most people can see what it was trying to do.
Yeah, and I think it's
this
pretty
is not
iconic.
That. This is just copying bits from Evangelion badly and pasting them into a show, which is not Evangelion.
Well, to be fair, this whole episode is full of copy and paste jobs. I mean, did anyone else just see the whole Duel of the Fates thing when they're fighting with the whole, like, Latin choir, and they're all, like, killing each other, and just, like, you've just nicked that scene from Star Wars where they did it much better because, you know, we cared about them. Like, pretty much is the difference. I mean, it's just, oh, again, they missed opportunity after missed opportunity. But yeah, this whole episode was just, like, bits nicked from other things. I'm just kind of like, you know.
Hannah, before you continue, I have to clarify. Do you mean Duel of the Fates, Obi-Wan versus Darth Maul, or do you mean Battle of Heroes, which was Anakin versus Obi-Wan?
No, I mean Duel of the Fates. I mean
okay.
Episode 1. Right?
Okay.
I know my music.
I'm just double-checking, because some people might confuse those.
Because you're the Star Wars nerd, so you have to double-check these things. I just wanted to get it in before you. I was like, I must get in the Star Wars reference before you do.
All right, Hannah, why don't you go ahead?
Just to be fair, I was about to say that most Japanese culture that does reference Judeo-Christian theology and whatever, in Japan it's kind of played fast and kind of disorganized in general. Like, I'm actually thinking of the video game Xeno Saga, if any of you guys have heard of that. It has a lot of its plot line and a lot of its motifs do circle around Gnostic Christianity, but the thing is that they play so fast and loose with everything that I have come to pretty much accept that if Christian theology and Judeo-Christian theology does get involved in Japanese stuff, it is not going to be more than people picking and choosing whatever sounds pretty good.
Well, right. And there is a lot to be said for that. You know, in Western culture, in America, we use Greco-Roman imagery, you know, the old gods of the old cultures, and we just throw them into everything and just use them as set dressing. But we never then go and claim, you know, that there's a relation between, like, Wonder Woman and the actual Greek pantheon. Which I think is the big difference between, like, what you're saying with Xenosaga, which, you know, uses a lot of the same imagery, and then Gaim, which, I don't know, just it's just a little too close for no reward.
Yeah. I like that whole Norse thing that they had going on there. Like, what if this whole thing had been moving towards some sort of Ragnarok kind of...
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that would have been at least thematically consistent. I mean, that's the biggest issue, is that there's just no consistency in the whole thing. Because as you say, they start with this Norse idea, and that kind of peters out by about episode, I don't know, 15, 20 or something like that. And then they kind of keep pulling in this Judeo-Christian thing, and it's kind of pulled in and pulled out, and then you get to the end, and there's just no consistency. I mean, that's one of the biggest issues with this show, is it just can't seem to commit to anything.
It doesn't make any commentary about it.
No, exactly. No. Exactly. That's the other issue. There is lack of commitment and lack of commentary, and it's like, well, why are you doing it then? What's the point? Just putting it in there for no reason.
That's because you guys just don't understand that Urobuchi is promulgating the monomyth.
Oh, the monomyth.
You'll have to explain this to me, because I don't know what the monomyth is.
Oh, the one myth that unites humanity. So there's, you can do salad bar, because it's really all one myth, and everything's all fake, and, cultural distinctions don't matter, blah, blah, blah.
Like, there's always, who is it? Someone gets tied up to a tree and left there for ages in Norse mythology, and then there's always mention of a great flood in... Every single religion.
It's the common source theory, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's cool. No, I know what you mean. That's fine. We're just making sure that I was on the same page, because I don't know. The monomyth could have been anything.
Yeah. Sorry. I just like mono something. Anyway, let's move on.
All right. Okay. Moving on.
Okay. So, really, Mai, you're actually sympathizing with Kaito. I believe that not for a second. If she knows he wants to murder billions to possibly set up a new world and system wherein things are better, she would reject that, just like she rejected Michi's arc.
In fairness,
but she's become the woman of the beginning, so she's a different character now. I almost believe that's true. It's so strange.
Insert retching noises here.
Yes. I'm not saying that I agree with that. I'm just saying that's what I'm always coming to think, because it's just so strange that she would heel turn that like that much. It's just like,
maybe they're trying to say, and again, if we go with the understanding that Kaito wants, you know, it thinks that on the other side of all of the murdering people, things will get better. On some level, I think we can all get behind the urge, at least at some point in our life, where we're like, man, it would just be better if we all just started over. Darkness, grim.
I feel the urge.
Yeah, I mean, again, that's maybe being way too charitable to the show, and again, I'm always trying to meet the show halfway, but that's halfway. That right there, that's it.
It's her refusal to see the flaws in his argument. That's what I find so incredible about the whole thing. She's just like, oh yeah, maybe his argument is as valid as Kota's. No, it blatantly isn't, because he's self-contradictory in his very presentation of said argument. So you can't claim that they're like equally valid, because one is counterproductive and the other one is like, well, if we even knew what Kota's argument really was, because it's kind of not, I mean, it's kind of not even very well explained by him. So you're kind of like, well, it's basically hope versus despair, almost. But, I mean, that's never really made clear, so...
Right. I think Kota's argument is, Mina!
You know, just everybody. Just
we can like... do it!
I just
and he's resolved.
I come from
because
a
been
background...
told 50 bazillion times.
I come from a background where, like, genocide is just not okay under any circumstance. I don't know about you guys. I'm just kind of...
Well, I mean,
now,
I this
look, I think there's like... a very good argument to be made.
Yeah, genocide is not okay. Like, can we just, like, make that, like, a baseline for our society? That, you know, it's
like,
not
no,
okay.
No, we can't, because that's a bias. And we have to listen to both sides so that we can be objective.
I'm
maybe
not a
genocide's
regular part
a good
of the
idea.
Show. I'm as biased as I want.
Yeah, objectivity so is not the, I don't know, path to apotheosis.
No, I think not.
It actually might be the opposite.
Yeah,
really.
No, you are getting deep.
Jonathan, did you want to say anything more before I move on?
I think I basically said what I wanted to say. It just amazes me that she doesn't, like, even... the fact that she even considers their two arguments to be on an equal playing field... is amazing, and I'm just like, and this is the problem, because Maya was such an intelligent character, or at least she was a character that kind of that at least seemed to think a lot about things, and now she's just like, oh, they're both equally valid arguments because reasons, and I'm just like, well, I mean, obviously they are fighting, so it is difficult to have a scene where she kind of explains her inner thought process, and I can understand why narratively that's not very easy to do, but still, it's just
they could try.
Well, yeah, well, yeah, exactly, they could try. It's like, why? But I mean, this whole contest is contrived. But like, yeah. Anyway, yeah. We should move on.
Okay.
I'll make this point later on because it kind of fits in with other things.
I'll set it up for you. Why must someone win the fruit from Mai? Why can't she just give it to whoever? She has no say in it anyway. So what does her opinion matter to the show?
Because someone has to win. Dang it. You can't
only
just
one
leave
will
it
survive
to a girl with her feelings and emotions. Grr, testosterone, hard muscles. Grr.
I'm crying right now.
See? Grr.
I'm
cold and rational. Grr.
I love how every single time Maya says anything at this point in my love, I mean, absolutely abhor. I love that every time she opens up her mouth, she's just like saying some variation of, this is tragic and I'm sad about it. This is tragic and I'm sad about Kota. I'm so sad about Kaito. I'm so sad.
She has the power of a god.
Because this is the only opinion she has about any of this.
And it's so stupid because she has the power of a god. I'm like, you can do anything. You can stop them.
No, she can't because she has been stripped of all agency. Because
I'm saying from a like
a logical
forgetting that someone's writing the show, like ignore that bit. But like, what? If the meta universe, are we saying that that's an equally valid conflict? Because in that case, why doesn't she run between them and stop them fighting? I mean, that would be an interesting thing to do. Because if they stop fighting in the meta universe, then presumably something must happen on the real planet. So you know, like. I don't know. I mean, this whole thing amazes me. Like, I mean, this show would be infinitely better if people didn't just play by these stupid rules that no one seems to be defining or explaining what happens if they break them. It's not like Sagara's going like, oh, well, if you don't play along with my game, I'm going to kill this person or whatever. There's no like reason for them to act this way. They're just fitting in with him because it seems to be convenient. And I'm like, well, why can't they play the system? Why don't they just stop fighting and just wait? Because presumably Helheim would encroach upon the planet for a while, but then Sagara doesn't want the planet consumed because he wants it for the next, you know, the next species. So then you've got a bargaining situation, and that would be far better for the characters anyway than to then have some agency back. So I'm just like, why do they have to keep playing along with this game when there's no reason for them to do so? It's just, ugh. Why can you not see you're involved in a game? It's just, ugh.
Feels like he was trying to avoid the Madoka ending, which... ends with Madoka just saying, you know what, full reset. This is the world now works in a different way. And I think he was trying to avoid a situation where Kota and Mai are just like, okay, you know what? Reset. Everything works differently now. And I
but,
mean,
but why not?
For the sake of originality, I guess. I mean, props to Urobuchi for not wanting to do this exact same thing again. But when you look back at Gaim, it's just a series of him doing the exact same thing again. So,
changed one thing, so it's completely different.
Absolutely.
But I don't know. I would have had more respect for Kota and Mai if they turned around and been like, actually, yeah, right, now everything is different now because we've seen that this doesn't work, and therefore, as people, we're going to change things because we have the power to do so. That's what I mean. It's just, it would have made more sense for them to say that than this kind of weird solution they eventually come up with. But they haven't even explored what happens if they don't play the game. That's the point. It's not that there's been one episode where like they didn't follow the rules and something terrible happened. So there's no consequence to them not doing what Sagara says, really.
Yeah,
it's like, well, why are you doing it then?
Ryuki did that nice and early on. Oh, you don't want to play the game? This is what happens.
Yeah. And that's exactly, and that's fine. Like because if you have established stakes, but then we talked a lot about very early on about how like the stakes in this show were constantly changing, and no one really knew what they were anyway. So I guess that's probably a bit of a late dream to want to have stakes now. But
I guess.
Although I could have steak now, that'd be nice.
Yeah, I was going to say it's never too late for steak. that's all awful, but it just goes to show the weakness of the construction of the show. Speaking of like. You know, not great stuff in the show. I actually laughed out loud at the epic turnaround of epicness, where Kota like grabs
the
sword and snaps it. Because like it's so classically Kamen Rider, and it's cool when Hongo does it, and it's cool when Black or Kotaro does it. But like in this, it was just dumb. Like to me, it was especially goofy with the intercutting of the two fights.
And you know, the intercutting could have been interesting if it meant anything at all. There are writer series which have done exactly this sort of thing, you know, using the medium, the visual medium in which they are working to contrast two different conflicts which are being metaphorically played out through karate bugmen fighting monsters. But what are we saying here between the meta universe and the regular universe? What's the real difference? Are we saying that only Kota or Kaito could win this? Because we already knew that. Kuga, this ain't, is what I'm saying.
They do that really well in Agato, in the episode where Shoichi gets his memories back when he's doing that magic trick with the rope.
Awesome.
And he's like, oh, it's complete, and then he's in the water, and he's like, gets his memory back. It's like, I know, that's a really cool bit of this, but like, what? Yeah, I agree. What is this? This is just, like... I hate this whole thing of like destiny and fate that keeps being thrown around again that no one seems to want to address. It's like why is this so? Why can the show not come down on one side or the other? Is everything fated or not? Like you have to make a decision. You can't say both are true because it doesn't make any sense. Your universe falls to pieces, like this one. It's just
kind of on a tangent. Did anyone else notice that every time Kota went for the kill with the point of that lance, there was like this whimsical bell chime sound, and I'm sorry, I heard it under the music, and it was really distracting because it was just like, going for the kill, and suddenly
whimsical bell,
and whimsical bell, like I don't know, this was like a My Little Pony kind of. A final battle editing decision, and I'm okay with it because it made me laugh. But I don't think
but you shouldn't be laughing in the final episode. It shouldn't be like whimsical. I guess I don't know. It's like
I didn't hear it. That's strange, though.
I'm gonna go back and listen for it because I got to go in and take screen caps of a lot of this stuff so that I can just froth at the mouth for a while.
You know what?
That's what I need to do.
If you guys help me, maybe I can find that sound and use that as the bleep for this episode. I think that would be great.
It was pretty quiet, and it was definitely under the music, so I'm not sure if it's isolatable, but...
I'll see what I can do. I'll have a look.
Okay. Should we keep rolling through?
Yeah, let's keep going.
Okay, so, shut the F up about strength, Kaito. You're so dumb. F you, Urobuchi, for pushing this BS in Kota's mind that crying makes one weak. But I guess good on you for having Kaito reject that and affirm that Kota is strong,
for
I guess.
Whatever that
Except
matters.
Kaito should hate him, because this doesn't make any sense. This scene is completely ridiculous and makes utterly zero sense. If Kaito honestly believes what he's just been going on about, that he hates the way that the strong oppress the weak, what has Kota just done? He has proven that the strong are suppressing the weak because Kaito is the weaker and Kota has won the battle. As a result, Kaito should be on the ground screaming at Kota that he was right all along and the strong will always oppress the weak and he would have been the only one who could have shown him a difference. And what happens? They get really pally together for some unknown reason that makes no sense. And Kaito commends him on his strength. No, that is not the way this show should have gone down. I'm sorry. But it just really gets to me where they like have Kaito's like, yes, this I will defeat the strong and the weak will reign supreme. And then he just, and then Kota beats him. He's like, oh, Kota, we're friends. Like, no! Like, sorry. I get very angry.
Dang, I thought
like
I was frothing at the mouth.
That Urobuchi just went for the fact that, like, in that very moment, Urobuchi realized, oh, maybe he should be reacting to his own philosophy like any other normal human being would, and seeing that all this strong stuff is actually kind of self-contradictory. And that's why that's how I am rationalizing the fact that he was like, oh, Kota, you are now so strong.
If they'd gone down the route of like, oh, it's the Helheim fruit that's like taken his ideology, which was kind of like that, but was tempered with some realism and has kind of twisted it into this crazy thing that means like he'll do anything at all costs. And so when Kota beats him, he like cleanses him of the influence of the Helheim stuff. Then I could have rolled with that slightly better because it would explain his change in character that he was now free from the influence, but they just didn't go with that at all. So I'm like, well, what is this?
It was a logical reaction for anyone to have if they weren't a flat character like Kaito.
Yes.
So
my
entire interpretation revolves around the fact that Urobuchi realized, hey, maybe I can make a round character. Maybe.
He's trying. He's trying. Oh, baby's taking his first steps. Oh, someone get the camera.
The problem is this guy's written like I just don't. Oh man, what like?
Was there a second draft ever? Like,
ooh,
one does wonder.
Is there an editor? Like, is there a script guy who, like, you know, he gets the script as they come in and, like, goes through, spell checks, edits, takes it to the continuity person. Like, does that, like, that exists in a lot of serial entertainment industries. Do they not have that at Toei?
I suppose not, and I would think that the only reason why, I mean, this is me coming to a conclusion on the spot, is that they never needed one before.
Yeah.
Because they had writers who were a little
Kobayashi more on staff.
Yeah.
Kobayashi. Oh,
she,
man.
The master of internal logic.
Yeah. Or even in a way with his,
his
characters aren't always that great, but that his plot are clockwork perfection.
And this is a tangent too, if Takumi is, because I've only seen the first 10 episodes of Fights, but if Takumi is consistent with the guy in who transforms into Fights and has his face in the Kamen Rider Wars featuring Super Sentai movie, then I think I'm going to really enjoy Fights. And I know that's like a shocking, controversial statement, but it's true.
Well, I've seen all of Fights, but I haven't seen Kamen Rider Taizen yet, so I can't comment.
I have seen both. I could talk for ages, but I will say that Fize is absolute murder if you like a plot that revolves around people doing things that make sense, that would fix things. But
finished Gaim. I think we can handle it.
I can only see Fize as an improvement.
I was gonna say, how did you agree with me that a lot of Takumi's conversations based in the latter half of Fize go along the lines of, hey, you shouldn't trust that guy. Why not, says Mary.
Oh my gosh.
Silence, and that's all you get.
No.
That's the conversation.
Like I said, I could probably go on for another tangent for about 2 hours, which I have actually done about Heisei versus Showa, but I will say that Heisei versus Showa is probably the best apology you could have for Fives. It's like,
sorry.
Wait, it's
I really
saying,
want to see this now.
I'm
I really want to see
sorry.
This now.
Everything about Fives was terrible. Here, have this movie where everybody gets their together.
All right, we need to keep moving on. Though. But
yes, yes.
The superhero or Kamen Rider ties in, that's definitely coming up because, well, I'd like to talk about it. So
I need to see it. But yeah, anyway, moving on.
Okay, so did Mai after she became Shadow Mai or Eve Mai or Yui Mai, Rei Mai, whatever the hell you want to call her, ever try to actually stop Kaito?
Sorta? Like every time they had the little talks, like, about her dancing and her own internal strength, I think it was supposed to read like her trying to convince him to come back to the not terrible person team. But, of course, that's, again, me just going way out of my way to try and meet the show halfway. And that's as close as it comes.
All right. Let's see. In my opinion, this is in regards to Kota saying that Kaito had the right idea, but he just went about it in the wrong way.
No, he didn't.
Actions.
Yeah, no.
Actions and motives are almost equally important.
And may I say, motives only even start to come into it after the action has had one effect or another, and even then only as a way to mitigate the consequences you put on the person who did the acting. But I'm told that's a rather uncharitable way to look at things.
We're definitely coming at it from two different places, and I can actually respect a lot of what you're saying.
Oh, and I see where you're coming from, too.
I wouldn't mind that. I don't know. I mean, I'd like Kota to have a point, but Kaito's just a jerk, so I don't think Kota should be making, I don't think Kota should be making excuses. Like, that's the thing. Like, I don't, he loses respect as a character for me because he believes in him even to the point where he's tried to kill him and he still believes in him. And like, you could argue that's noble, but then there's a point where that crosses into stupidity, and I'm kind of like, I wonder if we're just kind of reaching that point where Kota's like, he tried to stab you multiple times and if you died on the battlefield, he couldn't have cared less, and you still want to turn around and say that he had a point. I'm sorry, but there comes a point where you have to say no. And like, that's, and to be mature about it is to do that and not to constantly be like, you know,
Urobuchi saw Forza, and that's what he took away from it.
Oh, you may be right. That's awful.
can we chain him to a chair and make him watch Forza with us?
if only we could like get him a transcription translated of our Forza episodes.
Oh yes, we should do that.
Anyway,
send it to him.
So when Kota and Kaito like hug and stuff, oh gosh, and say like they're gonna make things right, like, yeah, you should always do the right thing, that's a good message, but that's kind of like, it's a little too late for that, I feel. And like, unfortunately, that's all obscured and marred by the fact that the lesson is basically, kids, you have to kill somebody to get some, because that's exactly what's going to happen after Kota finishes his big fight with Kaito. He and Mai are going to go off and do whatever people do.
Also, there is never any way to talk through anything ever. You have to fight it out.
Yep, because that's mature. Again, it's just why do they have to play this game? Why do they have to fight? There's no justifications given for anything that happens here. It's just like, oh, we have to fight because we have to. Like, I know Mai is stuck in this place where they can't get to it without the future being set, but Kota and Kaito don't know that. She's never said that to them. She's never like, it's Kota's, the frame of reference is not they're both trying to rescue her. It's all about their own ideologies. So if anything, Mai is just the prize that happens to be gained by them, their own ideology winning, which is even worse in many respects. And also, like, why is Mai so eager to leave the planet anyway? Why does she just, like, go along with it? She doesn't even be... She's not even, like...
Even like, oh, Kota, have you thought about what leaving forever actually means? You have to leave behind your whole family, you know, Akira.
I have to leave behind my family.
Yeah, I have a life outside of you. There's the whole life that I have, you know, isn't that in any way important? No, because I'm a girl. Wait, what the, like, oh, God. Just no. It's just so, like, it's just like, oh, here's my prize. Let's go off to this other planet. Like, what, the, like, why? Oh,
okay, begrudging credit where it's due. And look, I'm being the nice one this time. I just want to point that out. That bit where the zipper crack dealy opened and it was into space. I don't know why. That was kind of a neat visual idea. Even though the rest of the scene just made me, like, try to bite my way through a bookshelf.
It was funny. I actually really like it. Just the idea of Herbert, like, hoovering all of the caught myself that time, yes! just vacuuming all of the terribleness out of Zawame City and going, okay, Urobuchi has left the premises, we can all relax now.
And consequences happen for nobody.
Yeah, perhaps like Urobuchi wrote, like, up to just before that scene, and the production team were just like, and a giant crack opens to, like... like, there was no... I don't know, it just... It's a... Like, are we going to talk about how stupid this solution is and how it's really ridiculous, but as an idea? Or are we going to, like...
Sure, we can get into that, but Hannah, I want to hear from you if you have anything you want to say about my just, like, not having a voice. Do you feel like she didn't have a voice, or...?
It seems like she's just kind of butted off Kota and is just basically a second mouth for him, you know? It's like if you cloned him, or maybe gave him a twin, which coincidentally he has. That was kind of an adventure, but no.
Oh, of course, because of the preview.
What I'm getting at here is that for the past, like, entire season, she hasn't had any... I'm trying. For the past entire season, she just hasn't had any, like, original opinions or thoughts besides, I want to dance and I want to take care of the city. Everything else has been, well, okay, he has a point, or he has a point. He also has a point. They all have points. They're all right. And I don't have a point of my own to actually stack up against theirs, which is really weird because there are a bunch of things you could say about the idea of killing the entire world just to create anew in your own image. I want her to have, among other things, a family, a school life, if anything. She could be out of school, that could be fine. I just want her to be a character. I want, like, bare minimum, basics. Like, where does she go after the dancing stuff is over? Does she just go to a manga cafe and fall asleep? Because that's something that sometimes kids do. That's happened. I just want to know. And that's...
Really, like, her family hasn't even been brought up, like, ever, as far as I can recall.
Is she
an orphan, or am I making that up?
She lived at the shrine, I think, before it got torn down, and now we don't know what's happened to her family or how that affected them. We only know how the destruction of the shrine and the shrine district affected Kaito. We don't know how it affected Mai, besides the fact that, oh, that sucked, but I'm going to keep working.
Yeah, like, right. Even if she was homeless living on the streets and was dancing because she loved the city, that's a good character, like, start. It's the top line of, like, a whole page of description of what her character is like.
What if she was a personification of Zalame City? Like, Sagara is a personification of the Force. That would have been cool. There are so many cool things.
That would have been cool.
That would have been awesome.
Shame they didn't do it.
Why didn't they do it?
Well, this is the point. What would have been amazing last week in the final battle? Kaito walks into battle with Sagara as his standard, the personification of Helheim. Kota walks into battle with the human army behind him, all as riders, with Mai as his standard, the personification of Zawame. That is a final battle I would want to see and
that
would love.
That would have been amazing, and she would have gotten some fighting in!
Yes.
But he didn't.
also maybe an awesome monster form. I am very upset at the lack of awesome monster forms this episode.
Yup.
Yeah. Okay. Man, I don't even know. Yeah, I'll say it. Okay, so Sagar has been pushing this binary choice on the cast in the grossest ways possible to get the nastiest results, just for Kaito to say at the end that that isn't right. Once again, the series has been too long for it to take till the penultimate episode for them to keep shoveling that garbage and not saying anything about it to mitigate it.
You know, just, like, remember that bit around the middle where Coda said that he was going to destroy the world, which demanded a binary choice, and then which ends in sacrifice?
Oh, yeah, that magical third way that he was going to make. Oh, yeah! I remember it well.
Yeah, good times. Oh, good
times.
You were there, I was there. Oh, good times.
Like. Yeah, it was cool. And then he murdered a bunch of Kurokages.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That went south, didn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, what happened to that? Whatever.
Kind of nothing.
He got to keep his stupid armor and his amazingly stupid DJ gun.
You don't really get to totally discordant after a while, like in the worst possible way. I don't know.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I wish like they would have actually made something of that fact. Like just Oren, like, that is a really peppy gun for the amount of violence you're using it for. I know, but it's the only one I got. Boom!
He says as he blows Oren through a window and out of a building or something. That would be funny.
What kills me about that entire situation is Sagara gets to walk off all, "Hey, I didn't actually do anything. This was all your choice."
Bull crap.
And Kota just has the gall to say, "Yeah, you're right. Thanks for not doing anything."
No, it's just, oh, Sagar, man, like, so much is wrong with
you.
This.
Know, it's like a, it's a good thing that in the real world, vicious a-holes will never just talk any old load of crap that they can think of so that they can do whatever they want to do and get you to do whatever they want you to do. Remember, kids, when someone says that the evil they're doing is just a natural behavior, you should believe them utterly, because why would anyone lie to you or themselves to get what they want?
Oh, but he just lies constantly, and it's like, but it's like he actually believes it. He's not like saying it to, like, deliberately manipulate Kota into doing anything, because he seems genuinely surprised when Kota turns around and says, "No, I want something else," and I'm like, "Well, you're the worst devil ever, then well done, idiot." But, like, it's just...
Well, you know, the thing
he's "Oh, I'm just the medium of fate." I'm like, bull crap, there's a load of rubbish. You've been actively manipulating this whole situation from the very start. Like, you were the one who was making all the Beat Rider games really popular. You were the one that got loads of kids into it in the first place. You're the one who gave Kota the Kachidoki thing and the Genesis Core and all this stuff. You're the one who's been constantly upping the ante all the time. So you can't just turn around and say, "Oh, no, I didn't do anything," when you blatantly did.
Yeah.
Just,
The weirdest thing for me is that there are people who have watched this same episode and same show that y'all and I have watched who have then gone on to argue. Correct thing. You all.
Hey, I'm in Texas right now. That is y'all. That is, that is correct terminology. Go on.
Thanks for backing me up there.
My friends.
But like, we've all watched this same series. There are people who are now, I have seen them arguing, like, "No, he is just a part of nature." And it's like, no, that's what we call an unreliable narrator, kids.
It's just
what we call lying.
I mean, if he is a force of nature, if he is a force of the forest, and he has no active will of his own besides what the forest wants, then, I mean, going by the definition of a true neutral being, he wouldn't do anything but be out for himself, which is just not what he's done.
Why would he give Kota all the power-ups all the time?
Yes, it's just so mind-boggling that Urobuchi is going against this basic tenet of the world that he's made himself, and he goes, oh yeah, he didn't actually do anything. It's just beating his head against the internal logic of this entire forest. He's just lying about himself. This is a lie.
Wait a minute. Is Sagara Urobuchi?
Yes.
He just
yes,
doesn't
he is.
Want
he is.
To be
this is what, you've thought ill this of. I
said that like a month ago.
Yeah, no, you did.
Because Urobuchi, he's called the Urobutcher because he likes to, do terrible things to his characters. Like, isn't there that Urobutcher bingo thing where, rape and murder and suicide and stuff are on it? He's the creator of those worlds and he makes those things happen to his characters because he enjoys seeing them suffer or enjoys fans getting attached to them and then seeing them suffer. Mm. That's basically what Sagar has done. And the reason he's given all those power-ups throughout the series is to tease out the conflict so that he can continue to enjoy the show that he's created for himself.
I just like to make them struggle, and that struggle becomes the story.
And that enjoyment, it means, wrong. Like, he has another motivation besides, propagating himself. Like, if he's doing something because he's enjoying it, that's another motivation besides...
Yeah. She's beyond his neutrality that he claims to have.
Animals don't enjoy, killing each other, necessarily. They do it because they're driven by instinct to meet certain desires or needs, critical needs to their lives. And
you could argue that there's a certain gamification to it, but the thing is that he's a force of nature. It's like trying to anthropomorphize like a typhoon or something. You can't do it.
That's a better example.
Yeah.
You can't do it.
A typhoon is a natural occurrence, to stabilize things that have become unstabilized, and that's not what he's doing at all.
He's not a weather disturbance, he's just Urobuchi.
He is evil, right? We are agreed on this fact.
Yes.
Right, good. He's beyond evil.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just going to skip ahead, because... We're talking about Sagara and how he is literally the author of the suffering of everyone on this show.
Yes.
I know I am not the only one on this podcast who is really weirded out to a degree that makes me frankly a little uncivil, that the idea of a Kamen Rider, one of Ishinomori's humanist attack dogs, is just going up to the great leader, to Big Machine, to the devil, to evil itself, and saying, hey, thanks for transforming me, guy. Later, have fun spreading yourself all over the place and ruining more people's lives.
Yep.
Oh, that stings.
Oh, yeah.
That is such a painfully brutal clarification of what is really going on here.
It's terrible because when I was watching the episode and it was like the time was like 10 minutes in, I was like, okay, what's going to happen now is Kota's going to go, right, with my new power, I am going to kill you because you have visited destruction and fear and terror on everyone I love or care about. That is the correct response, not what Aelith has just said. I'm sorry, but there is just
join the circle of abuse, you.
Pretty much. If he's like, transport Sagara and Helheim to that deserted planet in the middle of nowhere and leave them there. Don't join them, leave them there. That's what they deserve. It's just... Why? The equivalent in Forze would be like, I mean, it's like Gentro walking into high school and being all like, oh, there's all these cliques here, that's a real problem, and just taking them all and putting them in another high school. That doesn't solve the problem, it just moves it from somewhere else, and it's just going to repeat itself. Whereas he goes in and like actively tries to change it and changes the environment around him to make it work, and I'm just like, why? Why can you not see this is what Kamen Rider is about?
Well, I don't think the guy knows what Kamen Rider's about, because his big heroic conclusion is that Mai and Kota just go off together with a bunch of Invest corpses to screw, I guess?
I think this feels like the third option to him, which it really isn't, because this is the option that he had like specifically stated like 3 episodes ago, which I actually remember. He said that if you want to not change the world, if you want to leave it as it is, you have to leave the world. That was the second choice. That was the second binary choice he presented. And Kota's like, okay, That's the choice I want. When
yes, I'm going to play by your rules, great leader.
Oh, no!
Because I don't have all the power of a god.
Mm-hmm. He was like, I'm going to find this third option. I'm going to find the third option. This is the second option, Kota. Three,
right? That's how this goes?
Well, he is dumb.
He has to be able to count. He's a dancer. 1, 2, 3, 4. You've got to keep that rhythm.
Okay, he can count up to at least 8, right?
Yeah.
Well,
5, 6, 7, 8, 1, 2.
He starts at 5, though, right? In fact, right?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
It's like in Monty Python with the guy at the bridge. You must answer the 4 questions. There are 3 questions. Oh, yes, 3 questions.
All right, just 2 things. One, I think they also sucked up a couple human corpses, because some of them, maybe that's just me. I'm just, some of those corpses looked human to me.
Okay.
But again, just want to come back to, that's his overlord form. Like, they, again, is there no
It looks
editor?
Really Garou to me, actually. Like, there was a real kind of, that feel to it.
It's very anime. That's how I feel about this entire
When I first saw his hair, I thought he turned him into Yuya, and I was like, that's an interesting... Oh, wait, okay, no, that would be far too weird for this show. Like, which is saying a lot, considering what we've seen, but yeah, I was just, I thought he was going to turn him into Yuya, and I was like, that's a really bizarre plot
twist. Do you think that was his attempt at a parallel at all? No.
Maybe.
I don't know. Well, but
I guess Yui is kind of the catalyst for the start of it. So Man of the Beginning looks like the guy who started it at the beginning. Book ending, maybe. I don't know.
You sound like you have more to say on this.
Sorry, yeah, go on.
Oh, me? No, I don't. I was just throwing out an idea.
Oh yeah. Well, I think the big thing that hit me, besides the fact that it looks really terrible, like again. Isn't there an editor? Do they not have a department for this sort of thing at Toei?
They never needed one.
Go on.
I was going to say, perhaps they wasted all the budget on all those stupid explosions in the meta fight that made no sense. That was the Overlord form budget. Like, just there.
They had to find a way to integrate some decade in there, since they're doing greatest hits for everyone else. But the thing I also noticed is that their monster forms, if those, you know, a white wig and a silly white costume is a monster form, also have this nice little gender essentialist thing going on, doesn't it? Because the girl, she's in her white virginal dress, and he's in his shining silver armor. It's just, I don't know, it's a weird thing that I just could never not notice.
I want to go on record and say that Mai's outfit is not very well tailored, and that is me putting it as politely and non-sweary as I possibly can. I want to say that for the record. Okay.
I'm glad that's on the record, because that is not a thing I would have noticed.
No, I would not either.
I know the kind of work that they do on their suits. They know how to tailor things so it fits them. It just doesn't look very good on my... It feels like they were crying while they were sewing that entire outfit, and they couldn't concentrate on making a proper hem that fits Mai's body. It doesn't fit her. It's all wrinkly and horrible. I just want to go on record and say that that's a terrible outfit, and I will fight anyone who tries to defend the craft of that horrible outfit. Whew, okay, I feel better.
Well, that's good, because we've got more show to go.
Oh, yes, keep we going. Have, haven't we? Oh,
yeah. Keep going.
There we go again. Junoichi and Hase...
Yeah, I guess.
Just, like, what the frig is going on with this? Like, number one, how does he still not know? How has nobody told him? It's like, that's the worst kind of abuse I've ever seen. Like, it's horrible.
Like, I want to say that there's some sort of, like, oh, we must all join together to protect Junoichi from the pain of knowing his friend is dead. But leaving him with that kind of hope, that's just mean. After a certain point, I could almost forgive not telling him when the world was disintegrating around him. But jeez.
It's just... And then what's going to happen when he finds out? Because he's going to have to find out at some point. They can't just expect him to go to the grave and not work it out. So, you know, when he doesn't come back, it's just like, you know, he's going to be the most messed up because he knows they all lied to him.
Yeah, all like, his friends.
Yeah, people who love him, apparently, do. It's like...
Well, I think Urobuchi just likes the terrible world. I think that's what he likes to present, honestly.
Yeah, you know, for like, a guy with as much success as he's had, he's sure got a bleak outlook, doesn't they?
I'll admit, like, the whole kind of, like, all the missing persons posters and all that stuff, it felt very 9/11. It kind of felt like in keeping with the whole sort of, you know, there's been a crisis and we're not just going to shy. The world hasn't gone back to normal. Like, you know, I can kind of accept that. But this is just like... I think it was just like, oh, you think you're safe? Now I'm just going to put in a load more pain to screw you up. It was like, why? This is so unnecessary. Like, have Junoichi found the Hasei Society for... I don't know, like, have him doing something to honour the memory of his friend. Like, that's a really good character. That's, like, you know, that's proving that, yeah, you know, he's obviously been through the grieving process. Like, that would be the best of things to have done, would have been to show him, like, doing something to honour the memory of Hasei, rather than, like, this kind of, oh, he still doesn't know, and I'm just like, what?
I feel like what Urobuchi was trying to do there was, there's this theme in Kamen Rider of, like, telling unnecessary lies. It was in Double, it was in Wizard, it's in a lot of these episodes, like, where they're like, okay, we do have to tell them this lie, but with the intention that there's literally no other way around it. You could not... Oh, it was also in Ryuki, too. You actually have to tell them this lie or else they are going to not make it as people. But it was always with the intention that they are going to have to tell them the truth later, with the intention that, oh, this is something that we're going to have to fix later on, but for right now, for this express purpose of keeping them going, that is something that, this is an evil that we must put upon them, which I've always felt kind of weird about, but it
Yeah, I was going to say, I would never really agree with that, if I'm honest, like, for myself, but that if they want to, but then if a character thinks that about another character, I can say I disagree with it as a person, but I can't dispute that choice necessarily.
Right.
So yeah, I know what you mean.
I completely agree with it as something that you might have to do.
Yeah.
Oh no! I can see why you might have to do it, like, in really extenuating circumstances. But as a general principle, I wouldn't say it was the best thing in general.
The thing is, though, that there was always the intention of telling him later. There, like, they specifically say that we do need to tell them at some point. Gaim, I think, misunderstood that entire concept and went, okay, this is a lie that we have to tell them for the rest of their lives.
Gaim misunderstanding a theme prevalent in Kamen Rider? No!
No, they just had...
Get right out of town!
They had... No, he messed it up out of the gate. We're good. We're still 0-0.
Yeah, the one, like, in Wizard with the lizard man, it's the film director. Like, I'm pretty sure the actress, she actually knew, or she had a sense of what had happened, but Haruto just didn't tell her so that she would keep it together for that time. And it was interesting there, and it, like, added this, I don't know, I feel bad about saying this now, it added, like, a certain level of moral ambiguity that I thought was really cool at the time, and it's an interesting concept. And I come from, not necessarily a background, but an understanding where, well, you know, if you have to tell two people a lie so that there's peace between them because of the lie that you tell the two of them, that's maybe not such a bad thing. Which I know may sound crazy and counterintuitive, but it is...
No, I can understand.
It's an old thought. sorry, now I'm thinking about, meet so-and-so by the vestry. Sorry, I really like a few movies, and I've watched them over and over again. Much Ado About Nothing is one of them, and also The Importance of Being Earnest. And there's a little thing between these two characters in that, where people keep lying to, like, get them together.
Oh, yes.
Anyway. So, it was poorly handled in Gaim, but I feel like we could just say that about, like, a lot of things.
Everything.
So.
But this was poorly handled. Some things are poorly handled, and you can sit there and say, okay, that was poorly handled, but you can move on. This was distastefully handled, if anything, if nothing else. Like, it actually leaves you feeling, like, you feel terrible for Junoichi because you're like, this guy deserves way better than this. Like, you know, he's not, like, and also it kind of belittles his character development as well, because the whole point of, as I've seen it, the whole point of his character is that, like, you know, Oren takes him under his wing, grows him as a person, and then he comes out of the other side of it as a more fully rounded adult ready to take on responsibilities. And I would argue one of those responsibilities is the truth about what life is really like. And so for Oren to, like, to keep this back from him, it's like, well, you're just invalidating all the development that you've done over the past 45 episodes? Slightly, at least, if nothing else.
It's not questioned at all, like, his choice to do that. His Oren, which, it would have been really great if there was this moment of Oren going, oh, maybe I really should have
told
him. Maybe I screwed this up. Maybe I should have been the one to say, hey, this is what happened to Hase. But he didn't. There was no moment. That would have been really cool. It would have been this moment of, oh, hey, he's got another facet to his personality that actually experiences doubt.
Mm.
Which would have been cool.
He would be the first person on the show to experience any doubt in any meaningful way. Because, again, like, Kota has had a month of just sitting by the side of the river thinking about what it all means.
Mm.
But or if, in like, the end, he still decided to do the thing he had already decided to do.
Yeah, I would like if that scene had been played a bit differently, and Oren had actually, and when Junoichi was saying all these things, if Oren had said, like, Leo, let's go inside, that would have been a much better way to deal with it, because he could have, as you said, in his head, he could have been like, actually, maybe I did screw this one up. I really need to tell him, like, and now is important to do it. I don't know. I think that's, like, that would have been an amazing way to handle the scene, because it would have shown Hase, Junoichi, like, kind of growing, the final step to growing up and kind of accepting the death of Hase and then moving on with it. It would have been, like, that would have been a really cool, like, kind of end and rounded off his character arc, but they don't seem to have arcs in the show, so, you know, unless they're Michi's arcs.
Since we're talking about Junoichi and Hase's death, bringing up Zack, who is somehow alive for good reasons that are never explained.
If he's alive, why isn't Yoko alive?
Because she fell off a building, and the rule is, if you fall off a building... Oh, wait, no, you're right. I think that is the real issue, or the real reason.
Oh, man.
Yeah, like, I don't know. That's just awful and crazy.
Why?
It's just,
I mean,
nonsense.
Like, I'm not unhappy Zack is alive, because I do think he's a good character, but, like, at the expense of Yoko, no.
Zack is one of my favorite characters, and I'm absolutely, like, I am thrilled that he is alive, but why did it have to come at the price of losing another character who was about as equally flat and literally had no other reason to not be around?
Or, yeah. Because, I mean, they didn't even bother explaining why he's not dead right now. They could have just had her show up.
They showed him with crutches. So obviously he was injured.
Yeah, but, you know, show her. She was locked in a coma after she was in that explosion and fell off the building. That's all you need to do, because that's equally as likely as any of the other miracle resurrections that happened this episode.
Mm.
Oh, you know what just slays me just now thinking about it? You don't even get a grave for her. She doesn't get a grave. There's no grave. There's no memorial.
No one mourns her.
No one mourns anyone. Because, like, everyone knew Kaito. Does anyone know what happened to Kaito? No, the only person who knows what happened to Kaito is off in space.
Isn't he alive next week, though, in the previews? I don't even want to...
Then
everyone would be back from the grave except the woman. Okay, not Ryoma, not Sid, but...
Yeah, just like Rider Man and Tackle. Maybe Urobuchi you wanted to keep with that tradition.
And twisting it.
Okay. Yes. Awfulness. I'm gonna make one last point, and then unfortunately I'm gonna have to step out, and I'll let you guys finish.
Because, okay, cool.
You know, that's how I roll, apparently. So, Michi has been humbled, I suppose. It's cool to see him contrite and taking care of his brother. I disagree that he should be punished loads and made to suffer. All the talk about punishing him was a bit off-putting, because the guy needs help.
He does need help. Professional help. Loads of it. Worlds of it. And you know, the guy playing Michi, he's selling that performance. He's doing really good. But I don't think this show understands consequences very well. Or at least not moral storytelling consequences.
Well, like, no, I'm sorry, go on, Hannah, go on.
No, this would have been fine in any other show that would have been about moral ambiguity, but this is, we've got kids watching this? Is this something that, it's not just a matter of morality, it's a fact that he did all of these, so he should be facing consequences besides, you know, his guilty conscience, but it's basically saying that, okay, he was evil and he was really good at being evil and now he's being punished by no one for being that evil besides his
Why is he not in prison, more to the point?
I mean,
like, why is that not, why is the scene not Zach, an injured Zach goes to visit him in prison to tell him about dancing? Why is that not the scene? Because surely everyone knows what he did, so... Why?
Yeah, but nobody really knows, right, Michi? Ha ha ha, just us. We even know the guy who saved the world, now he's gone, or whatever. I think Urbucci really just wanted to, like, mitigate the maybe difficult writing of, oh, wait, these are people who live in a real world, and I have to create consequences for them. I don't know. It's hard to say. But I think on that ambiguous... weak note. I'm going to leave and go sit by the river and think about what it all means for a while.
Watch out for Invis attacks. I hear they happen a lot down there these days.
Well, as long as I dance, okay, I should be able to fend it off. You know, not if I was a girl. Sorry.
Just defy logic as strongly as you can, and Urobuchi will see you through.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
Always,
thank you
always.
For that admonishment. Okay, so I've had fun talking with Hannah. So, bye to you.
It's been a pleasure.
The
rest of us can get stuffed. That's just you. He doesn't care about the rest of us. Just Hannah.
But anyway, I leave the rest of the episode to you guys while I go off to another world. And
kick ass. Go to space.
Yeah, exactly.
Represent the human race.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Space guitar.
All right, guys. Have fun. And I can't wait to hear the rest of this. So hopefully the listeners enjoy all that is left to be said.
There is a bit.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
See ya.
So Takator's elitist burden has been taken from him. And like Michi, he's been somewhat humbled. But he's still better than everyone else. Mm. So that's a thing. Coda's message to Michi and the kids at home via Takator is pretty good, but the road to get here was really mired in filth.
Yeah, it doesn't ring very true.
No, especially not given the rest of the show previously. I appreciate that they're trying to end on a high note, on a positive, hey kids, the world isn't written by Urobuchi, but...
It just, like I said, it just seems like a desperate grab for the things that Kamen Rider was supposed to be and what this turned into. It's a desperate grab for, like, to get back on track. Hey, kids, that was sure a thing, but this is what we were actually trying to say.
Perhaps this was the point where they brought an editor on board and he was like, perhaps he got to the point where it was like, with Urobuchi scripts, he was just rubber stamping them, and then he saw some of the stuff on TV and he was like, oh crap, I approved that. Oh dear, get me Urobuchi on the phone now. Like, that was how it went down. He was like, right, we got to have a serious conversation about these scripts because these are just not having what I want. Like,
yeah.
Which is probably why they had, like, Urobuchi wants ended at episode 46, and they said, no, you're getting out number 47. We're undoing some of this. Which means that Gaim will die as it lived, pulling out cheap drama at the cost of its own internal consistency.
just like it's,
give me Drive now.
Like, I just,
like I just anything like would. I mean, just does anyone else feel this epilogue feels really bizarre? Because I feel this is just very strange. It's just so broken up and bitty, and it like this like cliffhanger, which isn't even really a cliffhanger, is like it's really weird and bizarre, and like what I don't even understand. Like, it's like what is why? I don't get it.
It feels like the weird coda at the end of Double, which I think was also very strange and stilted and weird. I will say that this is something I actually like personally prefer over like a big bombastic final battle, which we apparently got.
It was a final battle.
Yeah, it was final. It wasn't final because we get one in the next one.
No, exactly. Oh. Kamen Rider Fruit Preserve, or whatever we're calling him now.
It failed on every level.
Yeah. Oh,
right, okay.
I feel like this is much more preferable, because I have yet to watch a finale with a big old bombastic final battle that actually felt super satisfying. Besides Oz, I could say a lot about Oz.
Deno?
Yeah.
Deno!
I think the bit immediately after the big fight Deno's work.
Yeah, those scenes where like he thinks all the Imagine are dead and all that stuff. But they're beautiful scenes. I do love those.
And of course the end of Kuga.
Yeah.
Which I haven't seen yet, so I don't know.
I've been doing everything I can to avoid spoiling it for you because so good.
It is so good. And it feels like Gaim was trying to go for that very, very last episode where they were wrapping things up.
Mm.
But it didn't, because it's not really... It doesn't come off as hopeful or optimistic.
Well, and it has nothing to do with the series previous. I mean, at the end of Kuga, again, I'm very sorry, Jonathan, to bring that up, but at the end of Kuga, the Coda episode is a counterpoint and sort of a summing up of, not even a counterpoint, but a comment on the series' main theme, which is, this is what violence does to people and society.
Mm.
And then the last episode is ... and there's something more.
Mm. Mm. Right.
And this is not ... and there's something more. This is, oh, and by the way, everyone is still messed up irreparably because... Mm. We don't
but
care.
We can still dance, so therefore it's fine.
Yeah, it's like, just this endless line of dots.
God, I wish the dancing was any good at all.
Oh, me too.
There's a lot of them are professionals. It really makes me wonder if their like choreography team was just like, I don't know.
I don't think they have one.
No, they don't. It was the same dance over and over. And I could go another half hour ranting about how badly the dance was integrated. But sorry, let's go on.
Yeah, no. I think at this point it's final thoughts before we get to that bit that you had mentioned having, Hannah, because sounded really good.
Like, what do we think about next week's episode? Is there, like, any... I don't, like... The preview just seems really confusing. I'm just like, what? Like, why are we...
I'm mad that... you know, I think it's great that Gakusano's brother is coming in to play... Kota's brother.
Is that officially who he is, Kota's brother?
I think I heard someone say that. I hope, like burning, I'm wrong, because it's not like Kota doesn't have a sibling on hand who I would love... I've been saying for many episodes that I would love to have put on a rider belt and kick monster butt...
But she obviously is unqualified in one important respect.
Yeah, because, I mean, again, it's not like they don't have an experienced and pretty good suit actress who no longer has any other part to play. I'm not saying they should get the lady who played Yoko to be the suit actress for Akira as the new guy, except yes, that's exactly what I am saying.
That should be a thing that happens completely.
It's a thing that should have happened already.
Well, yes, precisely.
Shoving in a long-lost brother at this point just seems like...
Again,
why?
I hope I'm wrong on that.
I hope you're wrong too. Like,
But why? It just seems completely this whole coda sequence. It's just like,
you know,
I would be happy if they'd kind of just gone like final battle. He goes to space, and then we never hear anything about these characters ever again. I'm not saying I would be like, I'm not saying that that would make me like, that would be satisfying, but it would be over.
Yeah.
That's the kind of, I think that's kind of how I feel about it. I do find it actually really funny that like in the they're now like the phrase like Kamen Rider has hardly ever been used in Gaim. It's always been like Armored Riders.
Mm-hmm.
It's hardly ever been like, no, whereas like, and in all the promos for Drive and all the like booster material, it's like this Kamen Rider. It's like they're trying to make a distinction between there was that thing that was last year, but this guy, this is a Kamen Rider.
Well, wouldn't you?
I just thought it was really funny. They were like trying to make this. It was like in my head. It was like, oh yeah, okay. We're making a distinction that last season might not have been great, but this season we have a real Kamen Rider.
When I'm in Japan, I'll have to snoop around and see if I can get any like real. I can get like a feel for how people feel about Gaim and the start of Drive.
Action reports.
Oh, it'd be awesome. We have to do this. You can be our man on the, or woman on the spot. It'd be great.
Well, it would probably be more in the merchandise sales and like what kinds of merchandising that they would have out for Gaim versus what they'd have out for Drive already. Because my Japanese is not that great.
No.
But I will go ahead and see what kind of merchandising they're doing, because they're already changing around Toei Hero World, and by the time I get there, it will already have been completed and have the Drive edition, so I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, I think I just missed like Kiwami and stuff when I went, so yeah, like you'll be able to see all the Drive suits, like, oh, the hell, well, hopefully, I guess.
Yeah, I hope so. My goodness. Would love to see that suit. Yeah! Anyhow,
you were saying about this Urobuchi's craft or whatever the.
Oh, right. I don't know if this is something I made up or. I do sincerely think that I read this somewhere online. There is an article online about Urobuchi's design philosophy that stems from the fact that he had some sort of severe illness when he was smaller, when he was in his teens. Well, before he got into all of the writing stuff, he had a severe illness, and that somehow influenced the rest of his design philosophy in the fact that he felt helpless throughout the entire thing, and it severely changed his philosophies personally about like optimism and what you were supposed to and the kind of helplessness that life puts you through. And I just thought that was so strange, because if that one event completely changed your entire writing philosophy about everything, then he really needs to go talk to someone, because it's come up with, it has influenced a lot of really good surrealist work out of him, like Sayano Uta, which has a lot to do with like having a flawed or otherwise unreliable sense of self and a sense of what's around you. Because if you don't know what Sayano Uta is about, it's about this guy who is thrust into this alternate reality where everyone is exactly the same, except everything is a Cthulian horror. I find that really interesting in the fact that he has this perception kind of, like, his entire perception of the world seems to be like that. It seems to be like everything is actually that horrible. It's just that I'm the only one who can see it. Which is kind of middle school syndrome? Tunedia?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting. I think he does a lot of really incredible work when it comes to perception distortion. It just doesn't work for this.
No. And I think it's actually really heartening to hear that there is a central thing that he's trying to work through, even if he's not trying to actively transmit any sort of moral or about the world information
right.
beyond, you know, trying to process this feeling he had and trying to get other people to feel that feeling so that they will feel that feeling. Because, right. I mean... Because
it just seems like so many of his works revolve around the fact that there is this outside force that he cannot control, that no one can control, that is constantly... That cannot be fought. And I feel like the illness that he had at the very beginning of all of his career is a kind of a manifestation of that. So I don't know where that puts us with Gaim in general, which is still terrible, but it feels, it makes more sense when you look at it in a way where he's still working through the fact that he couldn't fight the illness personally. He had to wait it out.
Boy, you know, there's a lot to be... I'd made a comment at one point about Mitsuzane Kirishima and the illusion of control, and here it is. He's mad that one time he didn't have control, and boy, if that doesn't explain a lot of the rest of the internal morality of the show. I must have control. All things that do not involve me having control are stupid.
Right.
Like, I've found the source for the thing. He doesn't explicitly name the sickness. He says that he contracted some epidemic and had a fever. And I'm like, and that happened when he was 24. And I'm just like, you know what? Like, 2 years ago, I was in the hospital with a failing liver. I didn't come out like this. This is very much... Like, he can attribute this stuff to that time he was weak and that way he felt and trying to reproduce it, but that's not the... That's the problem with Gaim, at least, because that's the only one of his works I've seen. He seems to not have perfected his theory of mind. You know, the idea that other people can go through the same thing and not come out the same way as you did, because, you know, the rest of their life is the context, and everyone's lives are different. And I don't know, I'm just...
No, it makes perfect sense.
I dislike a lot of the morality in Guy, is what I'm saying.
I dislike.
It's nice to see where it comes from.
Yeah.
And nice to hear that there's a central thought to it, because... I've been, you know, we've all been saying, you've been saying it, I've been saying it, dear listener, perhaps you have been having an answer and just have not told it to us. You know, I don't know what Gaim is about. I don't know what its theme is, because Kamen Rider Saves the World is not a theme. It is not a reason to make a show. It's not a reason to do the hard work of sitting down at your computer and writing, you know, 24 hours of fantasy people doing things.
I mean, I don't want to belittle whatever he went through, because it I mean, it was tough. Sickness is tough. But at some point, you need to move forward past the idea that this is something that you can't fight, because he obviously made it. And that took some doing on its own, I feel. And I feel like if he doesn't give himself credit for that, then we're going to get a bunch more stories like this. You know what I mean?
Well, I suspect we're going to get a lot more stories like this as long as he stays in the, you know, in the biz. Because he likes it.
I want him to talk to someone. I really do. Like, I'm concerned. Genuinely concerned. I want him to talk to someone and maybe, like, get some peace and not think that suffering is the only great theme to put into your work. Because if I could sum up Gaien in one thing, in one phrase, it's suffering is happening right now. Period.
Mm.
Yeah, that is about it.
Yep.
Somewhere, someone is suffering. Which, like, look, it's, we live in a consumerist, predatory, capitalistic world. Yeah, it's true. And there's still life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's still beauty and there's still truth. There's still, like, all these... That being true does not preclude any good thing occurring. It seems to me that when Urobuchi takes this theme, he's like, oh, and because of suffering, there can be no beautiful thing. It's like...
Or if we have a beautiful thing, it must come at this arbitrary price because I say so, and it must propagate more suffering.
Yes, exactly. And so it's like, well, that's... It's just not true to, like, the life that so many people are experiencing, or will experience in the future. It's just... It's a very strange outlook on life to have, because as you say, like, eventually... Because he did survive... whatever this experience was, and again, it's not just talk down to the experience, but he did come out the other side, and that's what the spirit of Kamen Rider is often about, is about people who've gone through awful experiences but came out and survived them. And so you could argue he's actually in, like, a pretty good position to write about that kind of idea, because he has been through that. But then
it doesn't seem like he's gotten past it to the point where he could tell that to other people.
No, exactly. He doesn't seem to have, like, accepted, he doesn't seem to have taken that experience and used it in the way that he should. So it's a bit of a kind of strange... Yeah.
He just seems like, very bitter that he was ever weak or in a position of vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
At least, again, that's what comes through the work.
I feel like it comes through in Madoka Magica, too, because it also has that feeling of helplessness against, like, this... it's about entropy. It's about fighting entropy and how you can't fight entropy. And it's just... it's so bleak. It's bleak, and the ending comes at, like, a really good... I think y'all mentioned this two episodes ago. It comes in at a very good time and says, but there is still hope. There is this way to keep on fighting. It feels uplifting. It feels like there is this coda of, but we can do more than this. We can be more than this. But Gaien doesn't really have that. It comes at this downturn of, this is what you had to sacrifice in order to do this, and now the happiness we share comes at this desperate struggle that may or may not amount to anything. You need a kind of a certainty to your narrative if you want to write for this age group. You need to say, yes, there is this terrible thing that has happened, but it is not the end. You know?
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I just realized, though, again, I hate to analyze people according to their work, but, you know, creative work comes from deep inside you, and well, analysis just sort of falls into place, but boy, the villain of the piece, the one that we, you know, thanked because, hey, Satan, thanks for ruining everything.
Thanks,
bye.
Satan.
The villain in Urobuchi's life is a virus that is a part of the natural world just doing its job that you can't really be mad at.
Yep. Mm.
Kind of
telling, again, isn't it? If he had actually managed to portray Sakura like a virus, that could have been an interesting... like, if they would have actually gone with a more mechanical, impersonal, inhuman portrayal of the Forest of Helheim, a lot of what we've been saying probably would be moot.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. But that's another thing we've got to chalk up to wasted
that's
potential.
That's what happened in another timeline.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Where... Gaien was good, and the dancing meant something.
And the fruit meant something.
Yeah.
Mm.
And the writing meant something.
Where anything meant anything. I come out of every week of Gaien going, But does that just mean that nothing means nothing? Like, everything means nothing? I don't think you should come out of a episode of Kamen Rider like that, unless you're watching the last few episodes of Fives, which it makes you analyze things in a different way. It's not a matter of the narrative being lacking. It's a matter of the narrative
not knowing what to do with itself.
Yes.
In a way, seems very fond of writing himself into corners.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's charming, like at the end of Kiva.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But
the end of Kiva was brilliant. He realized he couldn't write an ending, and then he was like, "Screw it."
Yep, exactly.
I'm gonna write one anyway.
I wrote it myself into a corner, and. Yeah, let's just go nuts.
It was probably the most satisfying ending of a Kamen Rider I have seen. And not only because it ended, which I was also very happy about, but that had nothing to do with how great it was.
Oh, dear.
Oh, boy. I did not like you that much. Anyhow.
I'm blissfully ignorant of Kiva at the moment, but that will probably change fairly soon once I stop watching everything else I'm watching. So never. And oh dear. Anyway, we should probably wrap up since it's quite late for me.
I think we've covered most of the things, hit most of the bases.
Yeah.
Hannah, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, it's been wonderful to have you. We've loved it.
I've loved it too. Well, this was a lot of fun. I'm glad you had me.
Yeah, well, that's why I stick around.
Yeah. I just come for the free cake. They stopped giving that out a few weeks ago. I think I may have to reconsider my position on the show. No, I'm kidding. I'm not leaving.
Y'all should advertise. My goodness. Cake.
But we all know the cake is a lie.
I knew it.
Hit me right in 2005.
I'm glad that someone else said it.
Because you were going to.
I was biting my tongue like, no, won't, I won't.
We have devolved into memes.
I love 10-year-old memes. Either memes for 10-year-olds or memes that are 10 years old, you know, either way.
It's a vintage.
Either or. Let's get out of here.
Yep.
Let's get out of here.
It's been fun, guys.
Mm-hmm.
See you next week for the conclusion of Gai.
Stunning conclusion.
Well, stunning, shocking, insert any adjective you like. It could probably be used.
Well,
I'll
probably still be stunned. Because, just like, what?
At least it will be over. We can guarantee
that. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
next week it will be over.
Yes. And then dry.
That'll make it the best episode ever.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
So we're taking the positives. Anyway, it's been great, guys. See you next week for 47 when we finally get onto reviewing it. Woo!
See ya.
If you experience any complications, would like to make a testimonial, or have any questions, send your correspondence to unbindcastrx@gmail.com or contact us via Twitter @needsmorealeph, @gomasq, @illustratorplayer, @nejiround, @professorwhat, @sonyourface, @where'smyhenchman. On behalf of everyone, this is Amit saying we hope you have enjoyed this dose of the cure for the Kamen Rider Show. I run the show's Twitter feed @uncommonrx, as well as the Toll Network feed @trialofheroes, where you can keep up to date on all our shows, including Moonspeak, a bi-monthly Sailor Moon Crystal show discussing the ongoing series. Subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, your favorite RSS reader, or visit trialofheroes.wordpress.com to get it all. I read something and I reblogged it on Tumblr. Bailiff, you may know what I'm talking about. From Common Radar, which is his account.
Oh, yeah.
Brad T. Well, it's funny because Brad T messaged me like, I can't believe anybody who hates Gaim would, you know, reblog or follow Common Radar.
Yeah.
But he's the guy behind Common Radar. So, anyway, hi, if you're listening, haha, very funny. I guess that was a cute moment. I was sincerely complimenting the episode 45 review that you made, Mr. Brad T, if you're out there, if you're listening. Like, seriously, I thought you brought up some interesting points, but it's kind of funny that I just lost my point. My train of thought is completely gone. What was I saying? Why did I get into that?
Why did you get into the Brad T.
Well,
abyss?
Perhaps we were about to get... I mean, since we're talking about Junoichi and Hase's death, bringing up Zack, who is somehow alive.
Alright.
We are recording.
Okay.
We need to do the alphabetical intro thing, so it'll be Aleph, then me, then Jonathan, and then,
Hannah comes
I guess,
before me.
Oh yeah, I guess Hannah, you would go first, right?
Oh.
Are you calling yourself Hannah, or would you like to be referred to by an alias?
Because
I'm down with that.
let's just go with Hannah. It's fine.
Okay. All right, Aleph. Okay. Sorry. Let's start over.
We always screw this up.
Yeah. No, go ahead and do that, and I'll
always mess this.
I'll fix whatever I mess up. So, go ahead.